and welcome to Lit Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today. With me is my co-host, Charlotte. How are you today, Charlotte?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
Fine, thanks. And for this week's episode, we're being joined by Oki Ilianzu to discuss the cult of the customer. How are you today, Oki?
I'm good, thank you very much.
Great, it's great to have you.
Thanks.
And for our audience, to give some kind of background on Oki and what we'll be talking about today, in the fast-paced competitive markets, organizations need to become more and more customer-driven, creating a loyal fan base of customers for our excellent customer service and product quality. Oki's new book, The Cult of Service Excellence, out this September, explains how the environment and culture created in some of the world's greatest customer-focused companies resembles the mindset created by a cult. It is by understanding the anatomy of such companies that we too can embark upon a journey of customer excellence within our own companies. And just some background on Oki himself, he is the managing director of the consulting company Think Outside In. He has held several senior roles in major organizations, all centered on improving the experience of customers. And Charlotte, you can take it away from here.
Okay. Hi, Oki. You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you very much.
Very good. So to kick off, could you describe how a model of customer service would work to create this cult-like mindset?
Well, Charlotte, I think one of the most important things to understand is that a cult is kind of... What really makes a cult stand out is the fact that they have a very clear ideology, mm-hmm. a very, very clear purpose of why people within it are there, why they exist. And what I'm trying to talk about here is a model of being customer-centric, mm-hmm. you know. And that model is that everyone in the organisation understands that they're there to serve customers, that the customer's at the heart of the organisation.
Yeah.
And it's really important that everyone understands and has a belief in that. That's not just believing it, but they see actions and decisions that back that up.
Yeah.
So there's got to be a belief within that organisation that if you do the stuff that's right for the customer, then everything else will follow, whether that mm-hmm. be revenues, profits, and so on and so forth. And so that's kind of a customer-centric belief is key to the model. And everything else flows from that.
Yeah, okay. So are there any companies at the moment that you think are the best at creating this loyal base of customers? And what sort of things are they doing to achieve this?
So I get asked this quite a lot. And actually, almost the easiest thing is to come up with the obvious answers. And the obvious answers are companies like Apple, or companies
yeah.
like Amazon, First Direct, Disney, and in the UK, Metro Bank. Mm-hmm. These are all organisations that have proved that by focusing on customers, understanding what they need, customer
yep.
needs are, and doing their best to deliver that, aligning everyone in the organisation behind it, they can actually build incredibly successful companies that outperform hugely mm-hmm. their competition. And they really do those basic things really, really well. But it's quite interesting. I had a really good example of this just from the weekend. Our washing machine broke mm-hmm. on a Friday, and we went online to a company called Appliances Online, AO.com. I don't know if you've heard
yeah,
of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And by Sunday, we had a new washing machine plumbed, fitted, and working. Now, you might say, well, it's not such a big deal about that, but there is that what AO have done is they've almost aligned the whole organisation, be it the people that design the website, the people that do the ordering, the people that do the delivering, to make sure that lead time is as short as possible
mm-hmm.
because so I can get my washing machine as soon as I can. They understand my need, they align their whole organisation
yeah.
behind getting that thing to me as quickly as possible, the way I want it, and fit it as well as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what customer-centric companies do. They understand what customers need, and they focus the whole company on how they deliver it.
Yeah, I suppose in that way there's actually a crossover between customer service in the traditional sense, in that side of the company, that department, and the marketing department. So I guess they are marketing customer service now.
Yeah, so the reality is, in the way the world works at the moment, there are very few differentiators.
Mm.
Everything's becoming a white box, you know, whether it's you're a mobile phone provider, or you know, a network provider, or
yeah.
you're a supermarket, or whatever you are, there's pretty much choice for customers. They can go to lots of different places.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, ways you can differentiate yourself is in delivering what people used to call customer service, now call customer experience.
Yeah.
Giving customers what they need, that really makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, to your point around marketing used to be about, a company used to be about what a marketing department will say about them and the brand and what they deliver. But now it's about what customers say through social media, websites. You know, it's what customers review about a company that tells other people what they're like. And the most important thing about a company is that everyone is working together to get that end result for customers. So it's not just the job of the old customer service department, it's the job of the whole organisation to get make sure that the customer can get what they want. So AO.com isn't just about the person who answers the phone there or writes the tweets, it's about the way the whole organisation fits together to deliver excellence for the customer.
Okay, so I suppose that actually answers one of my later questions, which is, do you think it's important for all employees to be equally entrenched in this cult-like mindset that we've talked about?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question, and I think lots of small organisations are great at this because they only have a few employees, and everyone who joins fits into the culture, fits into the ethos, and fits into the ideology. But as they grow, they start getting people from different parts, lots and lots of different employees. So when you're 50, it's fine. When you're 500 or 5,000, it's harder to have all 5,000 with that sharing that same ethos. But it is absolutely fundamental because if they don't, say I'm not customer-centric and I'm dealing with you and you want something, I might say, oh, it doesn't really matter whether I do it today or tomorrow. It doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
But it does make a difference. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that everybody is aligned. And actually, most of these organisations have created such a strong culture that actually if you don't believe in what they believe in, you probably won't survive there. You probably have, there'll be some sort of organ rejection, you'll be cast out of the organisation, because that's how cults work, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you don't believe in it, you wouldn't belong to it, because you wouldn't believe enough. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm talking about. It's almost that level of intensity that drives this sort of cultural norms.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so do you think there needs to be a huge difference in the way different industries create the cult of excellence? So a difference between, say, chain retail stores and a restaurant chain and supermarkets, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think the fundamentals of how you go about doing this are the same for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
The requirement to do it is different in different industries. So if you talk about, I mean, it's been long documented that retailers, both food and non-food, are probably at the top of the performance for customers. And the reason that is because if you're going to a shop and it upsets you and doesn't deliver what you want, tomorrow you just won't go there again. If AO.com had let me down, I just wouldn't use them again.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually, retailers have in their mind that they have that the options are bountiful for their customers and they can go and do other things.
Yeah.
And so therefore, as an industry, they tend to execute what they need to do for customers better than in other industries.
Uh-huh.
In many other industries, there is a ability to tie customers in. I'll give you an example. Let's talk about mobile phone networks.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, once you buy your phone and join the network, you've probably got to sign a contract that means you're there for 2 years. So it means that actually, if they do something bad to you tomorrow or the next day, you might be unhappy with it, but the reality is
there's
cannot switch
you can do. Yeah.
For another 2 years. So actually, industries, or I think where they have high barriers to switching or difficulty switching from one provider to another, to one product to another, tend to, at the moment, to form less hard because there's less need for them to do it.
Mm.
But in answer to specifically to your question, in order to create this cult of excellence, this real fundamental focus of customers at the centre of business, you can do it the same in every industry, in any industry. And I don't just mean B2C, in terms of business to consumer.
Yeah.
I think it's exactly the same for B2B businesses as well.
Yeah.
So where your customer is actually another business, the fundamentals of delivering this great service is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you could pick just three top tips to give to customer-driven companies, what do you think they would be?
We talk a lot in the book about, you know, the main pillars of delivering it.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had to pick three of those pillars, without a shadow of a doubt, the most fundamental thing is this whole thing around belief.
Yeah.
Top down, through the whole organisation, that customers are the most important thing to the organisation.
Mm-hmm.
If you asked me tomorrow to go and join another company, what would I do? I'd say the first thing we need to do is get everybody to believe that customers, whether they're other businesses or consumers, are the most important thing to us in this business.
Yeah.
And it's not just to say, you go to loads of companies, there's stuff on the walls, there's stuff in the lifts, there's stuff in the toilets, saying the customer's the most important thing. But it's only if those words are followed by actions and decisions that people believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they believe it, you create this absolutely amazing core of delivery.
Yeah.
So that's number one. I think the second thing is to absolutely understand what your customers want and need.
Mm-hmm.
We said in the intro, customers are more powerful than they've ever been before. So understanding what your customers want and need has never been more important.
Yeah.
You know, we've businesses are littered who've not understood that and have gone out of business.
Mm-hmm.
So understand what it is your customers really, really need, and you really need to be very clear on it. I call these the fundamental truths. Understand what the fundamental truths for your customers are, mm-hmm. make sure everybody in the business knows what they are, and then understand how well you're delivering them,
mm-hmm.
being number two. And my third, actually, because there could be so many, is around this sort of almost relentless focus on delivery,
mm-hmm.
on doing the basics brilliantly. So lots of people who talk about customer experience talk about wowing customers and all that, and that is really important, don't get me wrong. But you can't wow customers if you don't get the basics right. If you don't do the things that your business is supposed to do right every single time, you don't get to the wow.
Yeah, you can't take that step up.
You can't take that step up. Because actually you go, well, that was good, and they did something nice for me, but yesterday they couldn't even get my name right on the sheet, or they didn't pick up the phone, you know, or the person was rude to me. These fundamental things that people call hygiene factors as if they're not important are the most important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's incredibly important to understand what they are and deliver them literally, consistently, without, you know, almost zero tolerance for errors.
Yeah.
The reason why Amazon is so good is because they hardly ever make any mistakes.
So, that last point's really fascinating, Oki, and I think I actually have a bit of a follow-up question for that. So, I think it's fair to say that most companies at some point will get something wrong, right? Mistakes happen, mm-hmm. and, you know, something doesn't get shipped on time if it's a retailer and stuff like that. But do you think that it's important for companies to learn this in a way that it will happen, but how you manage it is actually what will keep the faith alive?
Yep.
Because I've had it happen to me where I will never receive like a small package or something that you may have ordered, or something's broken and it didn't come on time. But the fact that the company would listen to you after and say, okay, we understand, and then we will fix it, actually ends up being more beneficial to them in the long term because they've handled that that risk and that crisis management.
Yeah, you've almost answered your own question. I think that how organized, so mistakes will happen. I think it's fundamental to try and make those mistakes as few as possible, but they do happen. I think once they happen, it's incredibly important the organisation doesn't try to blame the customer for the mistake and understand that actually that's not a good enough excuse, and be transparent and honest about why things happen and what they could have done wrong.
Yeah, just going up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number three, it's incredibly important to fix it, to listen. So I talk about the difference between listening and understanding. Customers will say something, you have to understand what they're trying to tell you. And one of the things I see a lot is companies that don't actually understand what the customer is trying to tell them. So they're actually answering the wrong question. That's not what I wanted. What I really wanted was this to happen. So that's incredibly important. You're absolutely right. But I think you could also they've got to be empathetic about how they fix it. You know, I had a flight that was delayed the other day and they said, here, have some tokens. I didn't want the tokens. I didn't want them. I wanted them to understand how I felt about the fact that I was going to be 5 hours late for my holiday. You know, no amount of tokens and £20 worth of stuff to spend in the airport. I don't want to be in the airport, you know. So it's about understanding your customers and their shoes. And just to finish that, I think one of the most important, if you ask me what companies are great at service, or how do you know they're good, is you go and look at how they fix problems. So one, they minimise it, and when they have a problem, how do they go about fixing it? The great companies fix the problems by understanding actually how the customer feels and understanding how they have to deal with that, rather than just trying to process them by saying, oh, there's a problem, here's 20 quid. Because that's often, most of us don't want that. We just want to, sorry, we understand how you feel, we'll work harder, never for that to happen again. That would be enough.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
Yeah. Okay, finally, Oki, I'll ask you the same question that we ask all of our authors in the podcast. What are you reading at the moment?
Well, I'm kind of rereading, if that counts.
Yeah, that counts.
A book by David Marquet called Turn a Ship Around. It's an absolutely amazing book about leadership. Mm-hmm. It's actually about nuclear submarine. But you've put the nuclear submarine to one side. It's all about leadership. Mm. It's all about leadership and followership. And actually, if you'd asked me for 10 things that I could do to create great service, one of the things I would have said is, in order to create the environment for service, culture, or customer centricity to thrive, you have to have an exceptional leadership.
Yeah.
And creating that sort of leadership is incredibly difficult in an organisation. And mm-hmm. David's book is amazing about how he, as a submarine commander, created this incredible leadership culture so that people felt empowered to make decisions.
Yeah.
So really, you know, at the end of the day, if you're a face-to-face business, you need your face-to-face people to make decisions in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to feel empowered to do that.
Yeah.
And the only way you can create empowered colleagues is by having incredible leadership that creates a safe culture for them to do the right thing and to make mistakes and feel secure in making mistakes. And have their own opinions and try and do their best for customers. And David's book is a subject lesson on how to create that sort of environment.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you, Oki.
Okay, and with that, I'd like to thank you very much, Oki, for joining us today on the podcast. Absolutely, it was a great pleasure having you. And if you'd like to know more about the upcoming book and Oki, you can visit us at www.litpublishing.com and on all social medias at Lid Publishing. And if you would like to know more about Oki and what he does, you can find him on Twitter at Think Outside In, on LinkedIn at Oki Imiyazu, and on the website www.thinkoutsidein.co.uk. And you can also join in the conversation with the hashtag Cult of Service. Thank you very much for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you again.